I'm reading from Proverbs chapter 20, and I'm going to start at verse 6, and we will sort of focus on the later verses mainly from about verse 12. And I'll read 6 to 19 in total. Many claim to have unfailing love, but a faithful person who can find? The righteous lead blameless lives. Blessed are their children after them. When a king sits on his throne to judge, he winnows out all evil with his eyes. Who can say, I've kept my heart pure, I am clean and without sin? Differing weights and differing measures, the Lord detests them both. Even small children are known by their actions. So is their conduct really pure and upright? Ears that hear and eyes that see, the Lord has made them both. Do not love sleep, or you will grow poor. Stay awake, and you will have food to spare. It's no good, says the buyer. Then goes off and boasts about the purchase. Gold there is, and rubies in abundance, but lips that speak knowledge are a rare jewel. Take the garment of one who puts up security for a stranger. Hold it in pledge if it's done for an outsider. Food gained by fraud tastes sweet, but one ends up with a mouthful of gravel. Plans are established by seeking advice. So if you wage war, obtain guidance. A gossip betrays a confidence. So avoid anyone who talks too much. Verse 6 says this. A faithful person who can find? Most of us will have trusted someone who has completely let us down. We grieve over that betrayal. Sometimes we might start to wonder, can I really trust anyone who's faithful? And if someone hasn't let you down yet, they will do. You think, surely I could trust them. A faithful person who can find. And yet this verse challenges us as well. Many claim to be faithful, but can any be found? And as Christians, we're called to be faithful, to be trustworthy, to be reliable, to be honest. We're called to be the righteous person who leads a blameless life, as it says in verse 7. But in fact, are we just like the others, the many, who claim to be faithful, but don't match up to it? We read earlier from Ephesians chapter 5, the radical difference of being a Christian, the difference between light and darkness. How are we going to live in the light of faithfulness when the darkness of unfaithfulness is all around us? Because living in the light is not the natural path that we take. And in those verses in Ephesians, in verse chapter 5, 15, it says, be very careful how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. Because it's difficult to live the right way, we need God's wisdom. And as the New Testament teaches us to be wise, God is pointing us to the book of Proverbs. Because in Proverbs, it paints the picture of the wise person and the good way of living that is to follow what is wise. There are so many different sayings for us to think about and puzzle over and commit to memory and take to heart. When we bring to mind a proverb, we're strengthened in our conviction that we're living God's wisdom. Allow these words to resonate with our soul, and that as we put into practice, we can learn how to be faithful. So this morning, we're going to look at just a few principles of wisdom from the early verses. And then mainly, we're going to look at the practical outworking of faithfulness in verses 14 to 19. So there are six verses which, Well, as with all proverbs, they're very rich in what they talk about. But I think it's fair to say that there's at least a theme to pull out, to draw out, of faithfulness from those verses. And verses in Proverbs do tend to come in, if not exactly easy to spot patterns, they're more like the sort of waves that come and go. And you'll get a sort of a dominance of a certain type of theme for a certain amount of time. And when you can see those kind of connections, we see the faithful person who can find, and then we find some verses telling us, well, actually, what does it mean to be faithful? What does it mean to be unfaithful? They can then really help us into putting that into practice. So firstly, some key principles that help us think about faithfulness. And we're going to see from verse 8 to 11 that all people are sinful and under judgment. We've already seen in verse 6, there's lots of claims to be loving, but not that many faithful people. And then this is explained further in verses 8 to 11. See in verse 8, the king, this is God's king, because he can see all evil, God's king judges sin. When a king sits on his throne to judge, he winnows out all evil with his eyes. Mine tells us, well, who are these sinful people? Who can say, I've kept my heart pure, I'm clean and without sin? All people are sinful. And then we see again God's judgment against sin in verse 10. Differing weights and differing measures. So someone who's cheating when they're trading. The Lord detests them both. He hates the sin of deceit and unfaithfulness. So we've seen God's judgment that all people are sinful. We've seen God's hatred of sin again. Even children are sinful in verse 11. Even small children are known by their actions. So is their conduct really pure and upright? And this teaching of original sin is an important Christian teaching, that we have a tendency to evil, that every aspect of us is spoilt by sin. Now, in God's mercy, we're not as bad as we could be, but we are weak and prone to sin and to giving in to temptation. All of us have evil desires. All of our sin is subject to judgment. It's not a message that's easy to hear. It's not one that we like to hear. And yet it provides a much deeper and more robust explanation than all the wishful thinking of the world. It's starkly realistic. And it's going to help us when we're thinking about unfaithfulness, that we're going to find that attractive, that we'll be tempted to rely on ourselves, and that we're going to find that other people are unfaithful. So all people are sinful and under judgment, but it's not a hopeless, despairing thought. Verses 12 and 13 tell us that God gives spiritual life. Verse 12, ears that hear and eyes that see, the Lord has made them both. It's God who gives our sight and our hearing. This isn't just, in fact, it's probably not mainly about being able to see and hear physically. Seeing and hearing so often in the Bible stand for that spiritual perception. So, for example, when people make idols, which of course they can't, they're not like God, they can't see or hear, and Psalm 115 tells us those who follow them will be like them. They won't be able to see or hear. They will lose their spiritual perception. Jesus quoted in Matthew 13, he quoted Isaiah 6 and showed that it's about our hearts. This people's heart has become calloused. They hardly hear with their ears. They've closed their eyes. You see, false gods, human philosophies and worldly priorities are not going to give us spiritual sight. They're the thing that close it down because they're generated by us. And we're not the ones who make ears and eyes. It's God who makes our eyes to see. And yet, we've got them closed. In verse 13, do not love sleep or you'll grow poor. Stay awake and you will have food to spare. We've come across this sluggard before, if you've read Proverbs and heard some of these sermons before, the sluggard, it's a little thread running throughout Proverbs. The sluggard is easy to lift up their hand. They starve because they've got a pot of food and they can't be bothered to lift it up to their mouth. The sluggard pays no attention to the world around. The animals are busy running around collecting food, but they're lazy and they just get poverty and hunger. And here we see someone, God has made their eyes, but they will not open them. It's what it said in Ephesians chapter 5, which is why I read that passage. Wake up, sleeper, and rise from the dead. There's this life-defining battle in the heart of every person. We're all sinful and fast asleep. We see this around us all the time, don't we? People who won't accept the truth. But when we're a Christian, God gives us that spiritual sight, those spiritual ears, to see the world as it is, to worship him. So wake up, sleeper, and rise from the dead. Because if we wake up, well, there's plenty of food. Christ will shine on you. Maybe this morning you're deeply regretting the effects of your unfaithfulness. It's not all hopeless. Wake up, open your eyes, and receive Christ himself. So we're going to open our eyes a little bit to the next six verses from 14 to 19. And we'll see in different ways, and I will sort of try and connect them a bit, but really we're seeing six different pictures of how we can grow in wisdom when it comes to faithfulness. So first, verse 14. I'm going to summarize this one as resist the pride of unfaithfulness. It's no good, says the buyer, and then goes off and boasts about his purchase. It's almost like two little scenes in this drama. You've got the scene where someone is buying something, or let's say it's a car, okay? And they go, well, this is without doubt the worst car that I've seen. You know, look, there's all these problems, it's kind of broken, you know, it's hardly worth anyone. No one's buying these cars nowadays. You know, I'll give you this tiny, you know, I suppose I can take it off your hands. You can sort of imagine. And then the scene cuts, and he's driving through the countryside with his friend in the passenger seat saying, whoa, you'll never believe what I paid for this. What an idiot. Now, the wise person can see both of those scenes. The shrewd and the unfaithful person is impressed by their cleverness. But God sees both scenes. Whether it's the seller in verse 10, who had different measures and weights, or the buyer in verse 14, God sees that unfaithfulness. When you have gained something by being unfaithful to others, God sees and detests it. Unfaithfulness and dishonesty can give some short-term rewards, but they're really small. Yeah, you've saved some money on buying something, but you've lost so much more. You see, what this person is now doing is now boasting in his sinfulness. He's exposing his lack of character to his friend. And God sees this. God sees that he's said two completely different things. God sees his character. But the life of faithfulness is far more rewarding in character and discernment and peace and joy. Resist that pride of unfaithfulness. If we're going to boast, let's boast in the Lord. So we're going to resist the pride of unfaithfulness. And then verse 15, we're going to value knowledge. Gold there is and rubies in abundance, but lips that speak knowledge are a rare jewel. Good advice is like a precious gem. You know, there are millions, there are billions of pounds in the world. So many different billionaires, lots of gold and houses and cars. There's things that are really beautiful to look at and to hold. You want to get your hands on something really precious? listen to knowledge. You see, you can get gold and gems and money, whatever it is, something beautiful by being dishonest. But the thing that's most valuable can't be got with deception. You can't buy the gift of God. Simon the sorcerer tried to do that in Acts chapter 8. You certainly can't cheat and get wisdom at a knockdown price. In fact, this is the pearl of great price. Remember in the parable, a man sold everything he had to buy this pearl, this one beautiful thing. The kingdom of heaven is beyond riches. That's what Solomon did, if you remember. He could have chosen riches or power, but he chose wisdom, at least at first. And we're tempted, I think, to rely on ourselves and our inventiveness and skill, on our own wisdom. And if we're going to be faithful, we need to find outside of us what's truly reliable, to put our faith in the faithful one. The knowledge of Christ gives greater riches, life, honour, peace, satisfaction. Let's remember again the sheer beauty of listening to the words of Jesus here at MNC every week. This is a rare jewel. We might think it's just something we come along to as we meet and talk about the Bible and encourage each other and point each other in the right direction and pray for each other. This is something to be valued above everything else. In a world of faithfulness, faithful teaching is beyond value. So don't be weary of putting in the hard work to listen and respond. It's tough, isn't it, to see the sin in our hearts, to listen to knowledge. But let's be encouraged that we're going in the right way, that we've got this pearl of great price. So we're going to value knowledge. And then verse 16, we're going to be wary of the foolish. Take the garment of one who puts up security for a stranger. Hold it in pledge if it's done for an outsider. It's basically teaching us not to put ourselves at risk for someone who is not trustworthy. A bit of explanation, I think, needed for this one. So the first thing to think is the law of Moses said that you can't demand someone's garment, someone's clothes, their final, most personal possession as security from them. You can't say, well, I'll give you this loan, but only if you give me your cloak, because then you'll have to give it me back, because otherwise you'll die tonight in the cold. That's the kind of, you know, taking someone's cloak almost stands for kind of taking them as a person, holding them hostage. If you give someone a loan, you can't take everything from them to get it back. Exodus 22:26. If you take your neighbor's cloak as a pledge, return it by sunset, because that cloak is the only covering your neighbor has. What else can they sleep in when they, I will hear, for I am compassionate. That's the first bit of context. The second is, I think, to get our heads around the characters involved in this tiny story. I think there's three people here. First, there's the guarantor, the person who has put up security for a debtor. That's the second person, who is a stranger. And because there's a debtor, there must be a creditor. There must be someone that they owe money to. Think of it like this. Let me try and tell you the story. I'm going to come to you. I've agreed to cover the repayments of someone else's loan. And I come to you and say, well, their bank has said that they're not sure there's enough security there. So they need me to kind of guarantee that as well. So if the first person couldn't repay, and the second person couldn't repay, then, you know, if I couldn't repay, then I need you to help me out. But you know, it's very unlikely. There's hardly any interest on this loan. It's just to kind of fulfill the paperwork, okay? Just, you know, help me out with this one, because in a few months' time, it'll all be absolutely fine. You know, don't worry. This isn't going to happen, but I just need your help, you know, just for a little while. So you say to me, well, just tell me about this person. So, well, funny you should mention that, actually, because I don't really know them very well. They're a stranger. Putting all this together, you're not going to take my cloak, right? That's the wrong thing to do. You're going to not get involved. Taking a cloak off someone is clearly wrong. You are not going to get involved. The only way you could imagine getting involved in guaranteeing this loan for me, for the person that I don't even know, for the situation that's never going to happen, the only way you're going to do that is by kind of, you know, holding me hostage, as it were. Well, of course you're not going to do that. You're going to step back. I'm not getting involved. There is no way for me to be safe, sorry, for you to be safe in this situation because I'm so untrustworthy. Proverbs is really strong against being a guarantor for someone else. By all means, give them a gift. Show them compassion. Be gracious. That law in Exodus is to protect the poor. It is not to protect the deceptive, the inconsiderate, the completely foolish. Prudence doesn't stop us being generous, but it does stop us gambling. Generosity is about being voluntary, not putting ourselves at the mercy of events outside our control. You are not untrustworthy, you are not unkind, if you fail to pay someone else's debts. You do not have to take on someone else's debts. You see this in a big way. You think of it's a sort of principle called moral hazard amongst big companies. Companies that are too big to fail. They've got an unconditional pledge from the government. And so they have had a track record of taking risks because it doesn't matter if things go wrong because the leaders of that company will probably be okay. The government will bail out the bank anyway, because they're not taking the consequences of their own action. Don't make a promise that ruins you and corrupts someone else. You're not necessarily helping someone if you give them such a promise. How might this happen to us? Well, you might find pressure coming from a relative, someone who's got themselves into difficulty. You don't need to let your obligation to them bind you into their foolishness. If you aren't willing to give them something and you haven't got something to give, don't lend them it instead. The fool doesn't need propping up in their life. They might need something difficult saying to them. They need Christ. As hard as it is to say no to them, they do not need someone to prop them up in their foolish lifestyle. The broader message to take from this is that we can be freely generous, but to be faithful to another person doesn't mean supporting their future foolishness. And as with your money, so with your time or your effort. You see, the faithful person knows about sin and doesn't trust the one who's foolish. In fact, there's only one person we can fully rely on. There's only one person who can take all our liabilities. It's Jesus who stands in for us and gave himself for all our sins. So we're going to be wary of the foolish. Verse 17. And I think there's a similarity with the three verses sort of in sets of three. So you'll see verse 14 is about the sort of boasting about deceit. And here we've got the sweetness of deceit. And similarly, verses 15 and 18 are about knowledge and getting guidance. And 16 and 19 about being careful, being cautious with those who are foolish. Verse 17, we come back to the sweetness of unfaithfulness. We need to resist that. Why do people deceive each other? Because it's so sweet. The sense of victory or success, the sense of my own wisdom and your foolishness. Food gained by fraud tastes sweet, but it's in the mouth. This is a really, really horrible image. It is not nice to start eating, I don't know, a sandwich and realise there's some dirt in it, is it? Is there? It kind of ruins the mouthful. You've got this unpleasant, crunchy texture. Like biting a stone really hard on a fruit that you hadn't expected. It hurts, it cracks your teeth. Imagine a mouth full of gravel. which you've got to keep chewing down on, absolutely full. It doesn't dissolve in your mouth. You can't swallow it. It's breaking your teeth. It's cutting into your cheeks and your throat. I mean, it's a really horrible image. That's what it's like when we've gained something through deception, where something is not straightforward and honest, and it's hurt others. I think food here, food gained by fraud, it kind of stands for the essentials of life, our heart's desire, the thing we really want. Think of the champagne being cracked open at a scam call centre when they've snared their victim. Think of the sweet peace that we feel if we've lied to people and told them we're not actually available. A good thing gained in an unfaithful way is bad for us. Proverbs 7:18 talks about drinking adulterous love, drinking the waters of adultery, which it tells us lead inevitably to death. You think a mouthful of gravel is bad. In Proverbs 6:27, it talks about adultery like this. For sex that breaks the marriage promise is like scooping fire into your lap. When we persuade people to do things in a dishonest way, that will lose our joy, won't it, when we've got a tender conscience? We know when we've not been straight with people that it's difficult to cope with. The joy of what's gone well is taken away. What's worse than that is if we have a... Maybe it does taste sweet, but there's a reckoning coming. We're hardening ourselves further. We're risking our relationships. We're standing ultimately against God, who hates dishonest measures. He will judge sin. But holiness, faithfulness, is sweet to the taste and sweet in its long-term effects. Sweet to the end. The bread of life endures to eternity. Verse 18, we're to value advice. So we've thought already about listening to knowledge. Verse 18, the first part tells us a general principle. Plans are established by seeking advice. Don't act on your impulse, have some careful reflection. Leadership doesn't depend on your genius, but on faithful and ethical friends. And then a specific application. So if you wage war, obtain guidance. War is serious. It brings death. It risks everything. Occasionally it's necessary, but it's not to be taken lightly. Before you take that step, he tells the government, make sure you're doing it in such a way that's consistent with God's wisdom. Get in advice. When we've got a big decision, let's listen to others' advice. Are you someone who's perfect? No, of course not. Let's not be wedded to our own judgments. We need to listen to the right advice, because there'll be some advisors that see war as a way out of their own problems. Maybe they stand to make a lot of money if this king... There'll be people who don't care about the suffering that it causes. So we need to seek out people who are faithful, weigh their advice with the scriptures, and make our plans based on that. We have to trust faithful people, even if we've been let down before. It's very interesting, this. These verses are both telling us to be really cautious about the one who is foolish, but also to reach out for advice to those who are faithful. What if you've been unfaithful? You can taste that gravel in your mouth crushing your teeth. You know you've got a spiritual battle to fight. There's a war that needs to be taken on. You will not succeed in overcoming unfaithfulness by yourself. It may be difficult to admit it, but you need to get godly advice. And here's the encouragement. Plans are established by seeking advice. Who establishes our plans? Well, it is God himself. When we live in a way consistent with wise advice, it's God who sits behind that pattern of life. What an encouragement for us to keep going, to keep listening to others, to keep listening to God's word, because our lives will be established in that way. Lastly, we've got another person to be wary of. See, wisdom is not about a simple, I just trust everyone, or I don't trust anyone. And there are some people not to trust. The gossip. A gossip betrays a confidence, so avoid any. The gossip takes private information and makes it public. Maybe to embarrass someone else, maybe to raise their own status. But the eyes of the wise can see. And we've woken up and we can see that they have lowered their own status. We are fearful of them. They're like a spark in a dry woodland. Have a look at James. The wise person is wary of the damage that bad speech, that gossip can do. The gossip isn't careful, they're thoughtless, they're unguarded. They don't weigh up the advice of the godly and decide what to do. They don't value knowledge more than the finest of gems. They might not be trying to hurt people, they might not be being malicious, but at heart they're not actually loving people. They are not faithful. It may even be some kind of inner emotional feeling that makes them want to splurge out everything they know of a secret, but they're compulsive and careless, and they don't have the wisdom to control themselves. Being wise, being loving, isn't about some just upspring of the heart and doing whatever you feel like. Being loving is also being controlled. Because the end result is just the same as the liar and the cheat that we've already seen. They've hurt others. And they're fatal to ourselves. They've damaged themselves because any sensible person is going to avoid them. You're not going to ask them to discuss your plans because they're going to become public. You're not going to talk about what you might or might not do or what you're thinking or what you're worried about because they're going to jump to conclusions and spread it around. They're not going to come and talk to you first if they've got an issue with you. No, they're going to badmouth you to everyone else. So you're going to avoid them. So when we get advice, we need to be careful. Make sure we talk with someone reliable. And don't let's become the gossip ourselves. And for that, we need to test our motive and the impact of what we do. Are we sharing someone else's weakness with someone trustworthy in order to get good advice to help them? Or is this about what I can get out of it? Build a bond with my friend at someone else's expense. It's a hard area to think through. A wise person takes it seriously. So putting all this together, we've seen in verses 14 and 17 the pride of unfaithfulness, the sweetness of unfaithfulness, and we're resolved to follow the faithful way. We've seen in verses 15 and 18 how important it is, like gems, to get knowledge, how important it is for any serious endeavor to get advice, and we're going to turn to God. We're going to turn to other wise people. And we've seen in verses 16 and 19 that we're wary of the foolish person and wary of becoming like them. We need to trust in the trustworthy and be trustworthy ourselves. God has given us the ears to hear good advice. God has given us the eyes to see what's truly valuable. Let's wake up. Let's embrace His wisdom. Because there's only one who is truly trustworthy. Wake up, sleeper, and rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Just going to take a few minutes now to reflect on these verses which we've seen. I want to encourage you to choose one of these verses that would be really helpful to take to heart for you. I've written this on the notes for the young people. And I said, why have you chosen it? Memorizing it and thinking about it more during this week. And I'd encourage you, tell someone else after the service about the verse that you've chosen. So let's just spend a few moments thinking, how are we going to take to heart what we've read in Proverbs?